Hi guys, welcome back to the HYM podcast for another episode. You're joining just me today in my wonderful hotel room here in Stuttgart. Travel restrictions got me stuck in Germany for a while so far. But yeah, Nick and Alex have racing commitments as we film this episode today. But our guest will absolutely make up for that. He's a good friend of mine who was my teammate last year. He's the 2018 Italian Formula 4 champion. And yeah, he's raced in F3 last year and this year with Charouz Racing continuing in F3 as well. But here to talk to just me this time, it's the legend that is Enzo Fittipaldi. How are you doing, mate?
How are you, Jake? Thanks a lot for the invite. It's a pleasure for me to be here. We're very good friends. Like you said, we're teammates together last year with Jack Doohan as well, and it was a good time, and I learned a lot with you, and yeah, I'm just really happy to be here.
Yeah, mate, we've just had Jack on actually this week.
So
we've had the whole HWA 2020 team now have appeared on the HYM podcast.
No, that's great. I have to have a look at the podcast with Jack. I saw you guys posted something about it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go have a look after.
Yeah, mate, it's brilliant. Tell everyone else to listen to it as well while you're at it.
Oh, I will.
So whereabouts are you? Whereabouts are you?
So I'm in Indianapolis right now, because my brother is gonna be racing the Indy 500 on Sunday. I arrived here like a week ago, and it's a big event. It's like the last 3 weeks. Qualifying was on Saturday, so almost a week ago, and now the race is gonna be this Sunday, and I'm here. Basically, what you do is you stay in these RVs where all the drivers stay, and I'm staying here with my brother and my family, and we're basically inside the track. The track is right outside, and we have the whole oval going around us, so we're inside, and it's like a little parking lot where all the drivers RV stay. We all stay together, you know. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty. It seems like it's done differently a bit out in America. I could just imagine if that was a situation over in Europe, that nobody would be speaking to each other. You know, everyone's a bit secretive. But I get the impression in America, it's all like a big family sort of paddock, and everyone has a laugh together.
Oh man, it's really really nice, because like the other day, Will Power, he bought a ping pong table. And he's right in front of us with the RV. And basically, he was playing ping pong with his trainer. And then one driver came to play another driver. And then there was almost half the grid of IndyCar there. They were ping pong against each other. And it was great. Everyone was having a great time. You know, everyone's respects each other a lot on and off the track. And yeah, compared to Europe, it is a different atmosphere, but obviously when you go out on track, it's full on competition. Yeah. But it's just the atmosphere you have outside of the track. It is a different feeling. Like I'm used to racing in Europe, and I come here, it's way different, you know. So it's a lot of fun. It's very nice.
Yeah, it does look it. But your brother had a good qualifying, didn't he? I think he was fastest rookie.
Yeah, so in total there's 35 cars. He's racing with Dale Coyne Racing. He qualified 13th, which will be a good starting position for the 500. It's a 500 mile race, 4 hours long. So there's about, I think, 8 pit stops in the race, so a lot will happen. So if you're there in the top 15, I think you can fight for the win, you know. So it's just really important about having a really good race car, and the car that follows really well in traffic. That will be very important. And yeah, he was fastest rookie. It was really good. And it's just, first time here. He was supposed to race in 2018, but he had the accident in Spa and broke both of his legs, and he had to miss the 500. So now he's racing, and I'm looking forward to watching him on the race on Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun. my is first it? Time. So,
go on.
Yeah, it's my first time here. So it's like the speed the cars go, it's impressive. I was went to go watch there on the front straight, and it's just like it's like a rocket. Like they come by like bullets. I've watched, yeah. You know, you when we watch Formula One in person because we were in the Formula 3 is the same race weekend as Formula 1. But man, this like the speed these guys go, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's impressive. Yeah. It's but really the,
and then you think they race like wheel to wheel impacts. Not so much at the Indy 500. I think they get side by side a little bit, but you know, they race these cars like 200 plus miles an hour, like with three or four or five of them right next to each other. You know, it's almost asking for trouble, but it makes for a pretty good race to watch. Well, even to compete in, I imagine.
It is. I'd say it's crazy because like, as well, you make one mistake or something and the wall is there. You know what I mean? There's no run up.
Yeah.
Like you're going, you lose control of the car. And you're not gonna go on the grass. You're gonna go on the wall because the wall is right there. So it's there's really no margin for mistake when you're going at those speeds and the wall. You're being so close to the wall. My brother told me how like you have to have so much confidence. Mm-hmm. You gotta be flat in the qualifying four laps. So basically, what they do the four laps. It's a four lap average. Mm-hmm. So they get your speed of four laps and. You have to stay flat. And I was speaking to another driver, Rinus Vike, and he was telling me that in qualifying, he's flat with the right foot and he has his left foot over the right.
So that he doesn't sit. Yeah, just to convince himself.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, if you lose it, you lose it. That's it. He's going to stay flat, basically, is what he was telling me. Like,
That's the right attitude.
Yeah, so like I was impressed. I was like, "Are you serious? You actually do that?" And he's like, "Yeah, I have my right foot. I'm flat, and I have the left foot pushing my right foot, so it's harder for him to lift. So he's basically flat." So I was like, "Jesus, that's crazy."
Well, it worked for him, I think, didn't it? He qualified P3.
Yeah, it did. It did a really good job. I think the 500. It's crazy because you see teams like Penske. Which struggled in qualifying and they won last year with Will Power. They were really struggling this year. Will Power was fighting to be in the race. So you see how how competitive it is, you know? So it's just, I think every time they go out, they trim they take off a wing or downforce. You have more speed, but it's more sketchy in the corners.
Yeah,
less drag. So that's in qualifying. Like getting up to qualifying, they raise the horsepower of the car by 150 horsepower, and they go trimming. And normally they take out like 40 pounds each time they trim of downforce. So it's pretty crazy. It is. Yeah, it's crazy, man. Just to be here watching it, it's. If when you watch the race, I've watched this race so many times on TV and you don't notice how fast it is because the cameras are following the cars. The speed doesn't look that fast, but when you're here in person, it's pretty cool.
I mean, I've got to be honest, I've never actually had the urge to want to do it. You know, I mean, it's not like I just have the choice whether to do it or not. There's obviously a lot of commitment and it's a very, you know, proud moment to be able to race the Indy 500. But I've never really had the desire to want to, you know, go down that route of seeing if it's possible. I don't know why. Maybe it's because in Europe, we don't have anything like it. So you don't grow up with that kind of culture of, you know, oval racing. So I just don't have the desire built into me. But maybe if you tried it, or like you're going to watch it for the first time live at the track, maybe I might change my mind. I don't know.
Oh, mate, you are more than invited. If one time, if we, let's say my brother races again next year, or hopefully I get an opportunity or something, you're more than invited to come watch. Maybe you get an opportunity one day to do the race.
Mate, I'm gonna hold you to that.
Yeah, you're more than invited, man. It's an amazing event. It's like I don't know how to explain it. It's whenever the event is, it's so big that it's like, I don't know, it's bigger than you. You know what I mean? It's just like the whole event. It's a 3-week long event. Like just that pressure building up to the race, you know, it's like,
it's the biggest race in the world, I would say. I mean,
in one day, I think the capacity is 280,000 fans in one day. So like around the whole track. So if you will see some pictures, it's pretty crazy the amount of people. It's a lot. It's fully packed this race. Unfortunately, this year, only 40% of fans are allowed because of COVID.
Yeah.
Definitely better than nothing. Last year, only, I think, 0% were allowed. So it won't be how it normally is, but it's still going to have 40% of fans, which is, I think, is near 100,000 fans. So still a lot of people. But, like, you think about it, the race in Monza, Formula One, I think the max capacity is 120,000 people. Yeah. That's one of the biggest races in Formula One with the amount of fans and everything and the podium, that there's a huge straight with full of fans. Imagine 120,000 people, and then here it's 280. It's like, it's so many. It's crazy the amount of people.
Yeah, I think Silverstone and Monza, I hope nobody quotes me on this, but I'm pretty sure Silverstone and Monza are two, if not the top two, sort of visit, you know, fans at the track over the weekend. But I think in Silverstone, I think we get over 300,000 over 3 days.
Okay.
Like 320,000-330,000 over 3 days. But that's like, that's what the capacity is on race day in Indy.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like in one day, like what they get in 3 days, it's all in one day. So it's like, it's a huge stadium. You know, like you look at a soccer field and it's a stadium because it's the oval and then there's all the grandstands around. So you're basically, it's a big stadium. And yeah, it's the amount of people and the tickets are sold out. And it's just like, yeah, it's a huge event. It is the biggest sporting event in the whole world, not mistaken.
Do you think you could sneak into it at the last minute, just sort of like steal, get one of the cars that didn't qualify in the back somewhere and just take it out for a drive and hope nobody notices?
No, I think I would get in big trouble, Ben.
Mate, you've got too many fans. No one you wouldn't.
No, I would get in big trouble, man. I wouldn't do that. No, I would love to do that, but I wouldn't do that, no. So, yeah, like I was saying, there's 35 cars and only 33 qualify.
Yeah, so there's two.
Two of them available. Go home, yeah. It's crazy, man. Imagine you do all the prep to the race and two of those, all 35 drivers are going home, and it's like it is... It's difficult, man. You don't want to be, you don't know how it's going to be. You saw Will Powers on, and he won the Indy 500 last year. So it's extremely competitive.
Yeah, he nearly didn't qualify, did he?
Yeah, I think he qualified 32nd. 30,
in his teeth. It just goes to show how hard it is if a previous winner can nearly not qualify in Team Penske, you know.
Yeah, you have to, it's important. You have to have a good car under you, a good team, and, just the little details makes a huge difference. And every team in IndyCar can be competitive. It just shows you that it's very competitive, and that's what race car drivers love. Yeah. You know.
Let's get on to what you're actually driving this year. So obviously, I think a lot of people would have seen that. I think you were down to do Indy Pro, if I'm not mistaken, originally. And I think I saw you out testing in Indy at one point on the street course. Obviously, that's, I think, not happening now. And you obviously, as everyone will know who follows you, you are at the first race of Formula 3 this year in Barcelona with the F1. So just quickly touch on sort of what happened with the Indy program, and then we'll get on to obviously what happened in Barcelona.
So, yes, at the beginning of the year, I announced that I was going to be making my move to the United States and I wasn't going to be continuing anymore in the Ferrari Driver Academy. I've always wanted to continue racing in Europe, but as you know, it's extremely expensive. And there was an opportunity here in the U.S. We went for it. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. We're struggling with just the preparation of the cars and everything. It was the team. I didn't make the right choice, and I was struggling a lot. We were losing like 5-6 tenths in straight line speed around the track, but it wasn't the engine, because all the engines are the same. It was just, you know, the preparation of the car, because the team I came to race with didn't race the year before, so because of the COVID. And yeah, we just didn't make the right decision. And at the last minute, an opportunity showed up. Charouz called me 1 week before the race in Barcelona. They said, hey, do you want to come race Formula 3 with us? And, you know, I didn't think twice about it. I said, of course. And I took the opportunity. You know, I've always wanted to continue racing in Europe. So I arrived at Barcelona. Last minute, I made my seat on Thursday and did the Friday free practice. Took me a while to get back up to speed, because, you know, you only have 3-4 push laps in an FP. So I still had a bit of issues with my seat that they had to fix. And then straight to qualifying, and I was ready, felt good. Then in qualifying, we had to still fix some things on my seat, and it was a decent qualifying. We qualified 18th, considering I arrived last minute and I wasn't really comfortable with inside the car. And we only used 2 sets of tires, and majority of people use 3 sets.
Yeah.
So on our second set, when everyone only used 2 sets, we were in the top 10. But we decided not to go out for the third set, and almost everyone else did, and they improved. At the end, we did race one. We started 18th, finished 12th, got the reverse grid pole for race two, was leading the race in the second race. And I had a contact with Schumacher. In the second race, Stewart said it was a racing incident. So, it happened, and I lost. I fell down to third. My car was fine. I had no damage. So I was still in the fight for a podium. And then, unfortunately, I had an electrical failure on my car that I had already started in the second lap of the race. So that was unfortunate. I had to had a DNF that race. And then race three started, I think, 18th again. And it was very difficult. You know, Barcelona is very difficult to overtake. So we didn't have any new tires, and a lot of guys around us did. So it was just basically, a difficult race, that one. But again, then after, we did 2 days of testing in Jerez, and we're getting better and better. And it's just, you know, just trying to improve the car and getting ready for the GP.
I think you did a good job, honestly. So obviously I have a lot of experience in F3, but so I can speak from experience when I say that, you know, jumping into a car like the Formula 3 car on Pirelli tires with the weekend format that you have, with, like you say, with no free practice pretty much, and you had no testing, like you say, having to make the seat on Thursday, I think you did a good job. It looks literally like, you know, it could easily look like a bit under the radar, especially the qualifying, but you can't expect somebody to be against really top guys who have had the full pre-season, done all the simulator, you know, no stress about arriving just before making a seat, as we say, to just be able to just beat them because, you know, because of your talent. It takes more than that. So I think you did a very good job under the circumstances, and nearly won the race effectively, the second one.
Yeah, the second, yeah, they were with the reverse grid. We were there, man. We were like, we had the pace. I was almost breaking the DRS with David. It's like always 9 tenths, 7, 8, 9 tenths. And then, he got me, but then I showed that, you know, we had the pace to win because I didn't let him go. I was attacking him after he overtook me. I was attacking him in turn one every single lap. So, we had very good pace. I mean, I felt really good in that race. I wasn't struggling with the rear tires at all. And I think if we didn't have the electrical failure, I think I still would have gotten a podium and maybe still even a win, because after I had the electrical failure, I think Hauger and Nannini crashed. So it would have been in the fight, you know. So, I mean, it happens. It's racing. You've had electrical issues last year. You know how
it is. Yeah, I've been there, mate. I've got that stamp.
Yeah. You know, I remember you had like 2-3 times where you're starting in the front and you had a electrical issue.
Yeah, I think we'll touch on last year in a moment, but I think obviously like what you were having a good end of the season last year pace wise, and I think our car was you know, hard to say whether we wouldn't could have won the championship against Prema, but yeah, if without those problems, I think we would have been top five. So I was a bit annoyed, to say the least.
No, but we did. I remember last year we started. It was very difficult. Let's be honest, we were lost. The first two race weekends. And then if we would have had what we had at the end of the year from the beginning and the knowledge that we had, I think your year and my year would have been way different. But it is, I think, that's racing, you know. So it's complicated.
But on this year, you're planning to carry on, right, with Shurus?
Yeah, so I'm planned to race the full season with Shurus.
That's good.
So there's 6 more rounds. The next race is in France.
Yeah.
And as well, I'm planning to move to Czech Republic.
Really?
Yeah, to live next to the team. So I'll be there for 3 months. So because basically all of our races is from June to August, and then there's the last race in Austin. So I'm going to be there for 3 months, and then I'll be living basically right next to the team.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense actually, especially over only 3 months. Where are you going to live, in Prague or something?
Yeah, so I'm going to live like 20 minutes from Prague. So it's literally right next to the team. The team has a little kind of a venue apartment.
Yeah.
So kind of like a small hotel, and I'm going to be living there. So going basically, every day to the team and doing sim work and working with the engineers and getting ready for as much as possible for the GP in France.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea, mate. I mean, looking what you did with no absolute zero preparation in Barcelona, there's no reason why you can't be aiming to win a couple of races this year for sure. But obviously you have a good teammate as well with Logan, sort of as comparison.
Yeah, so this year I was he is a very good teammate. Last year he did a really good job in FIF3. So I think there's two drivers with a lot of experience in the team. We have one rookie driver, which is Rashad. Very, very, very nice guy. I'm getting along with him very well, and I'm just trying to teach him as much as possible about these tires, and he's still learning how it works. You know how important it is to know how these tires work in this championship. So
to be honest, mate, after 4 years of doing it, I still don't understand them.
I'm still trying to. I think, to be honest, not it's hard, dude. It's really hard. I still, sometimes they work for me and sometimes they don't. It's very complicated tire, but when they're in the window, it's great.
Yeah, but that's Prema's, if we speak about why Prema is so strong, that is the reason why. I don't think they have a magic, button that they press which is why they win all the year. I think they just know a lot more about how to keep the tire in the window more often than the other teams.
That's true. I mean, I think... it's teams with higher budgets and things like this, I think they have this type of more feedback and equipment to look into this. So they know, I think every race weekend they have an idea of where the tire has to be and what in the window, and that makes a huge difference. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, if you already start the weekend and you're struggling to get the tires to work, you're already going to be one step behind. It's really difficult, but I've learned as a driver, I've learned a lot in this championship, especially like when it's that one lap tire and one lap track, but what you have to put the lap in, because that second lap, you're going to be 4 or 5 tenths slower. I think it's really important to get your head like fully ready. And, you know, you don't really have any break point. You have, like you said, I remember you were telling me last year, just like, you have to know where you're going to break already, because you won't have a second lap to improve the lap time. So like, you got to go in and put it all together in one lap. So it's, it's not easy. It's not easy, but I think I've learned a lot. So especially with you, you taught me a lot.
Oh, mate, you're making me blush. No, I think, like you say, though, about the one lap thing, it's a strength that that comes from being in the championship or competing in the championship in F2 as well. Obviously, F1 in some way you do have that kind of scenario where you have one lap, but more often than not you have two laps. But nevertheless, in F1 it's a little bit different because you have a lot of practice, and you know, a lot of the time you're limited by the car setup a bit more than in F3 as well. But you know, I look, for example, I haven't raced in the championship yet, but I've tested it. Formula E is very much the most extreme version of one lap qualifying that, you know, I think I can, well, there's probably somewhere else out there that's even more so, but what comes to mind is Formula E, because you have, you know, you do free practice, then you have one or two hours out of the car, and then you go back into one lap qualifying on a new power mode. So you have even more power, your brake points have to change. You know, you have one lap at the end of free practice with this power mode, but it's not enough really to sort of get a gauge for it. So you go into qualifying, you have this mental, I imagine you have this mental kind of, not battle, but sort of like, you know, I want to really push it to get pole or whatever. But if I mess it up, I'm going to be P17, and in Formula E, it's so hard to come back. So I think what F3 and F2 teaches you is that skill, which, you know, there's more and more championships now where you kind of need that, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, like when I came to the US and I did Indy Pro, the compound is completely different, and you have 7 laps to do the lap time. And to be honest, the first test I did, I was struggling to get that in my head that I can keep driving and the lap time keep getting quicker and quicker. I would do a really good warm up, and I would do my first push, and then I would cool down, and then the guys in the race, why are you cooling down? The tire's only getting better and better. And it took me a while to get used to it again, because you work so hard in FIF3 on the simulator to be on the limit as fast as possible, because you have one lap. And be on that fine limit that you're not over the limit, because if you make a mistake, you can't make a mistake, because now you qualify in 30th. So it took me a while. Like, normally you think it's easier, you know, to keep, you have 7 laps and you can do the lap time anytime you want. I struggled a bit in the first test to get that, because you think it's a good lap, the second push, but as you're driving more and more, your car gets lighter because of the fuel consumption, and the tires are getting better and better. So it's a completely different mentality here in the US.
Yeah, I felt that when I was racing my first year, and it was called GP3 then in 2016. And I did the last race that year in the European Formula 3 Championship. So the old Formula 3 car, effectively the less grip, really hard tire, Hankook tire. And I did the last race in Hockenheim, and I remember exactly that feeling of like my first lap, I was just bam on it. And I thought, I nailed that. And then you're just going, you just, at the end of the run, you're just doing a lap time that's quicker, but you think, well, but I'm not driving as well somehow, or something like that. And it does, you know, you're aware of it, so you're not silly and you're not naive enough to know that you can't keep going, but it's a different concept and it's a different mindset, I think, going into it. You have to really, it's all about how much you can push yourself to the limit. Whereas I think F3 and FE and things like this, there's a lot about pushing the car to the maximum. But if you gave everybody another set of tires and asked them to do it again, I'm pretty sure they could go quicker in Formula 3 and Formula E. And that's this is the sort of game you're playing all the time. It's like the pole time is often not always even the limit in F3, you know.
That's why, like, sometimes you even see some big differences in qualifying in FIF3, because, like, you have that one time. And if you mess up your warm up a little bit, you don't have the front tires in the window. You can be 1 second off. I mean, we've had experiences last year where we were sometimes half a second off, and we didn't know why. You felt like you were in the limit. I felt like I was in the limit. And it was simply because our front tires weren't working, or we just wouldn't get the tires to work. And that's something else that, especially for rookies that are coming in FIF3 and FIF2, I think that's where they struggle a lot if they're not in a team that teaches them that.
Yeah.
Because the reason, in my opinion, why rookies do so well in a team like Prema is because they do the right teaching, you know, of how to warm up the tires. And they don't really ever struggle with that. But we had that a bit of a struggle last year with HWA. And luckily I had you there, and I was just learning as much as possible from you. But it is definitely a big challenge. But at the same time, it's a lot of fun. The races in FIF3, there's some races that are like, it's so much fun because there is a bit of degradation in the rear tires. You have to control the tires, and there's guys that drop off, and the race, the DRS, there's some really fun races.
It's funny if you have the good degradation and you're the one going forward at the end and not backwards.
That's right. That's when it's fun, when you're just sitting there and you're saving your tires and you see those guys powering a little too early and they're sliding and you're like, oh, that guy's going to drop off. Just wait. When it's going good, it's fun. But when you're the one struggling, it's a nightmare. It's horrible.
How nice is that feeling, though, when you're sort of like last 5 to 8 laps, when you've just got like half a second plus lap time on all the guys around you, and you're just like, this is amazing.
No, it's a great feeling. I mean, you're just there and you feel like you could just sweep by them, you know?
I remember in 2019, in my first year of HWA in Budapest, I started 6th and 7th in the 2 races, and I finished on the podium both times, but I didn't make an overtake until like it has to be more than halfway of the race done.
Off, weren't they, with the rear tires?
Yeah, exactly. And then the last sort of 7-8 laps, I was just like 2 seconds quicker or something like that than the guys around me. It was great, because I knew it was just like, well, I'm going to be on the podium. So it's like 5 laps before the end, it was like, well, as long as I don't crash, I'm on the podium. And I was still P5 or something like that.
Yeah, when it's going good, it's a great feeling. I mean, one question I had for you, Jake, when you drove the FIF3, and then you had the opportunity to race Formula 2 in Russia with each, what was for you like, was it way different? What car do you enjoy driving more? And
I prefer the Formula 3 car, honestly.
Really?
The Formula 2 car was just, obviously it's more powerful, but you know what it's like. You get the power is the first thing you get used to in any Formula car, isn't it? It's not so much the power that it takes getting used to. It's the brakes, it's the downforce and things like that. So you have carbon brakes in Formula 2, which makes a big difference. But the main difference was the weight of the car and the fact that there was a turbo. The turbo lag on the Formula 2 car is horrendous. It's really bad, mate. Like, maybe there's different teams who can get away around it or something like that. So I'm not pretending to say that there's not something you could do to improve it. But I remember going out in free practice and I was just like, I was not using the gears properly. Basically, I was just so out of the torque band that, you know, you're having to put your foot down like already, like before the apex. It feels like just
by opening the turbo and it starts
pressure,
get out of the corner better.
Exactly. But if you're on a tire that doesn't have a lot of grip or a harder tire like you was in pre-practice, it's hard to do that really early because the tire can't take having even just some throttle mid-corner, if that makes sense. So you have to kind of wait, and then the more you wait, the more the turbo lag gets worse. So you have to really play with the gears. But I remember just on a side topic with F2, I just watched this week Théo Pourchaire's lap for Monaco, his pole lap for Monaco. And if you watch that, he's using the gears quite a lot. Like he seems quite using when you're in between, you know, those corners where you could use second or third gear or third or fourth gear. He's always going with the lower one and then short shifting. So he's going with the lower one, going on the throttle, building the torque. Building into the torque band, getting through the turbo lag. And then when the turbo kicks in, he's short shifting.
So it's not too.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't, because there's no like linear movement to it. It's just off run, basically.
Have a look at that. I haven't seen his lap, but he did it. I was looking and he did a really good job. Like I think he was 4/10 up on the second guy.
Yeah, exactly. 4/10 on pole, Monaco as a rookie. Yeah. Obviously we raced him last year, and he was very good. So Teo's a good driver, but I think Formula 2 is for that reason, it's also obviously the weight of it as well. The tire feels weird being an 18-inch tire as well, or the 18-inch wheel.
Funny, you enjoy, like, normally you expect you're going up categories, you know, you're going from Formula 3 to Formula 2, and you should enjoy Formula 2 more because it's a more high-powered car and more should be more downforce. So you enjoy the Formula 3 more than the Formula 2.
Yeah, for me, it's all about sort of like downforce to weight or downforce to power or something, like, you know, whichever one that is. So for me, sometimes I say the best car I ever drove is the World Series 3.5.
Yeah, my brother told me that as well. I asked them that the other day. The 3.5 is amazing.
It's a brilliant car. It has, I think, just over 500 horsepower, if I'm not mistaken, but a lot of downforce and a really good tire. But I actually think I had more fun driving the old Euro Series Formula 3 car, which is like half the power of World Series. It only has like 240 horsepower or something like that, but the car weighs like 500 kilos. Like with the driver, it's like 580 kilos. It's so light and it has so much downforce for its weight. That car was brilliant.
And you would do and I remember you telling me last year when we went to Silverstone, you're like, yeah, with the Euro 3, I would do Maggots and Becketts. So we'd be doing it flat.
Yeah. You wouldn't break from Copse until the last corner, basically. So you go Copse flat, Maggots and Becketts entry would all be flat. The last corner you would have to lift in Becketts, the last right corner. And then in Stowe, you would just downshift from sixth to fifth gear. You would not break.
You would lift a little bit.
Yeah, it would lift a little bit. It's not far from being flat, actually. You can do it nearly flat in sixth gear, but it's just not as quick.
That's great. I've never driven the Euro F3 or the old FIA F3.
Yeah,
I was supposed to do a test once in Budapest, but we ended up never doing that. But that's something that I've heard a lot of drivers say, that it is one of the most fun cars they've ever driven, because the amount of speed you can carry in the corners, and even though, like you said, it doesn't have the power, but the speed you can carry, it's really good.
No, like I said earlier, for me, the first thing you get used to with a new car is the engine and the power. Like, you know, that becomes quite old very quickly, that sensation, as you know. And then
in a new car, like when I jumped into the Indy Pro, which is almost 100 power horsepower less, at first I felt like, oh my, it's a lot slower. But you get used to it so quick that, like, after one session, I thought I would be like, man, it's going to be so much. But it was like, you get used to it. And just like whenever I jumped from the regional to FIF3, which is a pretty big jump of another, like 100 horsepower, you feel it like the first outing, but then you're already used to it after one or two laps and you get like you said, like you're used to it. So you adapt it pretty quickly.
Yeah. For me, the sensation of speed that makes a car fun is not what you're doing, you know, midway down the straight or at the end of the straight, it's what you do in the corners. That makes a difference. I mean, we had Dan Ticktum on a couple of weeks ago, and he said he drove the 2019 Red Bull Formula One car. And he actually said, if I remember correctly, I can't remember if he said it was better, but he said he enjoyed it just as much, was the Euro Formula 3 car. The little 240 horsepower thing compared to this 1,000 horsepower Red Bull Formula One car. And it's so crazy, but it's true. It's just how the car feels in the corners and lightness generally feels so nice. Like,
it's important. I think what is really heavy in the Formula 3 and Formula 2 cars is the halo.
Yeah.
But it's it's, I think whenever they first announced the Halo, a lot of the fans didn't like it. But now everyone, like, they love it, you know, and I think it looks great, and it's a great extra safety they've added to the to the car.
Yeah.
Second side.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. No, but yeah, like I was saying, yeah, the Halo, I always get this question. I don't know if I'm sure you get this question as well. People ask.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, they always ask, how do you see with the Halo? Do you get that question as well?
Yeah, and the honest answer is I actually forget it's there.
Yeah, I forget it's there. When I first drove with the Halo, I even forgot it was there. Like when I did the first laps, you don't notice it. And then like after an outing, you're like, oh, I have the Halo on. It's there. I remember in 2019 when we first started using it. It's like, I'd always try telling people, it's like you put your hand out in front of you. And it's, if you look at your hand, you look at it. But if you look ahead of it, you don't see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah, but even in a Formula car, you sounds weird. You don't need to see straight in front of you anyway on a race car. It's like, only, you know, really the only thing the Halo is bad for is the start lights. Sometimes the top part covers the lights.
You had an issue once, and I don't know what race it was, but I remember you spoke about it last year that you couldn't see one of the start lights because of the Halo, was it? You said it last year. I've never had this problem.
No, I've had it a few times. I just can't remember the example. I think maybe Budapest in 20... No, I can't have been there. But yeah, I've had it for sure. It's when you're starting more sort of mid-pack towards the back, from middle to back.
Yeah.
Because you just, I don't know, it's like at some point the top part of the Halo just covers the lights.
Yeah, when you have the lights a bit closer as well. I know you. Yeah. I've never had, fortunately, but I know what you mean. But it's a great, they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be honest, actually, it's quite, in a way, it's quite freaky, though, because I've seen in the last years, in F1, 2, 3, IndyCar, whatever, almost a lot of, like, examples where the Halo maybe saved the person's life. Or, you know, it's like where cars are going over the top and sort of riding the Halo instead of top of the helmet. And it's a bit weird because I never really noticed it happening that much when the Halo was not there. If you know what I mean? I mean, the biggest example, which is a bit different to what I'm talking about, is Grosjean's Roman's crash in Bahrain. Like, that saved his life. The Halo saved his life.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's just mad that... Because, I feel like we went through a period where people weren't, like, maybe climbing over the top of other cars or, you know, getting hit with things. I don't know. It just, maybe we just was a bit naive to it a bit more back then. But since it's been introduced, I feel like there's been so many cases where you could say that saved the guy's life.
Yeah, I think the Halo, it's been, it's a great thing. And I think in IndyCar, I'm here, and they have like a windscreen. They have the Halo with the windscreen it's the same like visor that the fighter jets use.
Yeah.
So it's a different concept. Well, it's similar concept, but it's a bit different. I mean, you've seen the pictures of the IndyCar.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a fighter jet a little bit.
Yeah.
It's really cool. But like my brother said it gets extremely hot in there, so they have to the helmet, so it cools down, because if not, it would be extremely hot, because obviously the visor, it stops the wind from coming in the car and cooling you down. So that's something, I don't know. Oh, sorry. You can see. Oh, it's back. Yeah. Yeah, that's something that that's pretty cool. I'm here, and it's quite interesting. You know, it's different. And the category I was racing in this year, Indy Pro, they didn't have the Halo. And
did that feel, like, weird?
Yeah, so I didn't, like you said, bro, I didn't feel difference.
Yeah. Really?
I didn't know. Like, I did the first outing, and you don't even think about it. You know what I mean? You're just driving, and I jumped in with the FIF3 and the Indy Pro, and my opinion, I don't really feel anything different. Just that there's a thing that's not there anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. Something I wanted to touch on, sort of in the last little bit of this the podcast, is obviously you and your brother, you have quite a big following. Naturally, what do you get called, the Fitty Force, or they get called the Fitty Force, or something like that?
So we have a big community that we grew in Twitch, and the majority is from Brazil, Portugal, and we started Twitch streaming when the pandemic started, and there was those F1 races that they were doing virtually. I was racing for Ferrari, my brother was racing for Haas, and we would stream. And we have a big friend that's a big Twitch streamer called Gaules. And basically, when I was doing the races, he started streaming my races, and they would cheer us on. And they're called their fan base is called the Tribo. It's like a big family, and they just supported us from then on, and the support has been amazing. And now we have our fan base, where we call the Fitty Force. Yeah. And we did the races for F1 this year virtually. We won the team's championship with Haas F1, and I won the driver's championship, and it was very cool because I was teammates with my brother, and we would do the streams on Twitch, and they loved it. And ever since then, we have the Fittipaldi brothers on YouTube and on Twitch. And now they're amazing. It's the fans from Brazil, they're amazing. It's so much. They love motorsport. They love speed.
Yeah, it was amazing though last year, obviously being your teammate, sort of seeing how much attention you do get. I mean, even like the team were getting a lot of, like, you know, tweets and messages just because you were racing for them. Yeah. It's like anyone. I mean, I had a little bit from it as well, but it seems like anyone who's close to you through racing, or is racing with, or racing for, or something like that, just automatically gets, you know, all these messages.
Yeah, so it's been like I said, in Brazil, we created this family there. And a lot of, when we do Twitch streams, we do them like, I don't know, when I'm at home, I do some races on iRacing, and I do a stream. And when I'm here, I have a streaming backpack, and I stream my brother doing his preparation. We have the fans that watch. And then when I was racing at HWA last year, I'm racing, so they want to know who's going to be my teammate. And they're cheering on, not just for me, but they cheer the whole team. And they cheer for you, for Jack, that were my teammates last year. And whenever you would get a win, they would celebrate. It's amazing, the support. And you saw last year, you see how big racing is in Brazil. And as well, the Tribo, which is from Gao, helped us a lot, and I'm very grateful for that. And it's amazing.
Mate, it's so cool, and you honestly you deserve it, but also you should be so, like, it should make you feel so happy to have it, honestly. Like, I mean, you only get one, you have to do something small, and you get all these crazy positive messages. And I mean, me, when I won a race or two last year, it was like I had all these Brazilian people messaging me and saying, Jake, come to Brazil.
They were all asking me last year, when is Jake going to come to Brazil?
Yeah, I still get the messages now.
Yeah, so when are you going to Brazil, Jake?
Well, there's a race there. I would go and race in the Brazilian stock cars.
Would you really?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to do that. I'd like to go to Brazil anyway, but...
Yeah, that would be the Brazilian stock car is it's huge in Brazil.
Yeah.
I went to a race in Interlagos, and it's amazing. It's a lot of people go watch. It's very big. And it's a lot of fun. I think you would enjoy it. So I hope you get an opportunity to race there one day.
I'm just saying, if somebody's listening to this podcast, a team owner, you know, wants to give me a go.
You never know. Yes.
That's right. But yeah, I think something you touched on obviously there was the obviously you just said it came from Twitch, this following you have.
Yes. Basically it all started on Twitch. So I think you know what is Twitch. My parents didn't really know what was Twitch at the time, and I told them it's a platform that kind of like YouTube, but it's all live stream. So it's all live. So you go on, you watch, and there's only people being all on, like live, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
The other big Twitch streamer that's out there that's in Formula One, it's Lando Norris. And I know you know how big he is on Twitch in the UK and things like this. So he's definitely like the benchmark there. So I mean, it's been great. I really enjoy doing the streams on Twitch, and you have to start doing streaming on Twitch so we can do it together, you know. So you create an account, you just let me know and we'll start streaming. We'll play some iRacing or something like that.
Oh mate, that it's something that I really want to do, honestly. It seems so powerful now, like the whole esports. You know, we saw what happened. Obviously COVID kind of kicked a lot of it off, like, or grew it very quickly. Anyway, it obviously existed before COVID, but obviously everyone being stuck at home and could only do iRacing or could only do streaming or stuff like that, that really kicked it off. But I'm amazed how powerful it is. But I've been wanting to do it for a while, honestly. The only reason I haven't, this is going to sound really 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 rubbish, is that I still live at home. I'm trying to move out at the moment, but I do not have space, and my mom would not let me take one room to put a simulator in at the moment.
So, I understand that. I mean, I totally understand that. I mean, you have to respect your mom. So, you know.
Oh yeah, I have to. You're forced to respect my mom. You have no choice.
I've never met you. I've never met your parents. I've spoken to your dad over the phone once.
He did not come to any races last year.
COVID. My parents also didn't really come. I think my parents, but last year was a big, like, to get someone to come watch a race. I think you would only have one guest because of the COVID. So it was a big restriction. But speaking like about the esports, man, it's growing so much. And in the past 3-4 years, it's grown like a crazy amount. And I think there's gonna be a lot of opportunities there. There's a lot of talents out there that are, you know, they can't afford to go racing, and they have the opportunity in sim racing. And I have a very good friend named Igor Fraga. He's a Brazilian race car driver, and he raced in Formula 3 last year, and his story is crazy. He won the championship in the GT Gran Turismo, that he was the world, I think, world's fastest gamer for Gran Turismo, won the championship, which is, it's a huge thing. It's very competitive. He's insane on the simulator. And he got the opportunity to race when he raced regional and FIA3 last year. He was a Red Bull Junior last year because of, I think, the win that he had at Gran Turismo racing in the simulator. So I think this is opening a lot of doors for a lot of people. And I think it's great because iRacing, it's extremely competitive. And there's a lot of other platforms. There's so many, R Factor, Assetto Corsa, F1 2020, F1 2021, which will be coming out, the F1 Esports. I mean, there's so many different platforms, and F1 are doing a great job to promote the esports, and it's becoming I watch some of the F1 esport races. I enjoy watching it. I mean, the racing is great, and I watch it when I'm at home and I see that there is going to be a race. I tune in and watch it, and I enjoy watching it. It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure at the moment, and I don't think this will ever happen for me personally, I obviously enjoy watching real racing more, but I think I'm surprised even myself, like, how much I do still like to watch it. Even like iRacing, like the sort of like, not, I wouldn't say the 24-hour races, but I do, because they're too long, but I do like click on to watch a little bit of it. But the F1 esports is done so well, actually. I mean, in the UK, we have a Sky Sports, and we have, you know, there's about 7, 8, 9 Sky Sports channels, and there is an F1 Sky Sports channel. So dedicated just to F1, only F1. But now they put IndyCar actually on, but also esports, the Formula One virtual Grand Prix are shown live on Sky F1. You know, Formula E doesn't get this, or DTM or something like that. You know, it's like it's getting so much airtime to people that, you know, they a lot of people will know more about the virtual Grand Prix than they probably might do about DTM or GT racing or something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that, but at the same time, it's amazing, because in the US, I remember after one of the F1 esports races that I did, I went to go eat at a restaurant, and they had the TV on. And the US is like, now it's F1 is getting a lot more, but like NASCAR is the main thing here in the US, you know, and then it's IndyCar and then F1. But now F1 is, I think Liberty is doing a really good job, and they're pushing it, that they just announced the GP that they're going to do in Miami. I think that was a really good decision. But anyways, I after the race that I did at F1 Esports, I went to go eat with my brother. And man, in the restaurant, in the, like a normal restaurant near my house, and they have the race on the TV there. Yeah. And there's my name and my brother there. And I was like, what the heck? And the people were actually watching it, the esports races.
Yeah.
And I live in North Carolina. And it was crazy to see, because I rarely, like, I remember I would rarely see, like, whenever there's the F1 race going on, the past 4 years I didn't live in the really in the US, but before that I would never really see, I would only see really NASCAR and IndyCar on TV. But whenever I went to the restaurant, I see the F1 virtual race on the TV, I was like, oh my god, this is really big, watch it, you know.
That's quite a surreal moment when you see an esports race being shown live on TV, but it's good. I mean, it's something I really want to do and will do in the short future. It's a short term. I want to do some stuff on Twitch. I also want to do some stuff on our channel on YouTube. But yeah, let's
help you out to get started. The Brazilian fans that follow us on all the brothers, they know about you, and I'm sure they'll give you a follow, and they'll help you sort it out there on the Twitch and everything, and help you get started. You have to start, bro. You're gonna enjoy it.
I consider myself like 10% Brazilian now anyway.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
You have to go to a Brazilian restaurant there in England. I'm sure they have some.
Yeah, it's some, all like the meat places, basically, the cards, like green and red card.
When you go, get a nice, they're called, the meat is picanha.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, I know
that what you one, mean. It's really good.
I've ate too much of that in my time.
Anyways, Jake, it was good. It was very good to talk with you, bro.
No, I loved it, mate. Thanks for coming on.
As well, I won. I know after the race, I spoke with my brother, and would love to do it. Chat with you as well. So I'm going to speak with him or you speak with him and sort it out.
Yeah.
But man, it was good. It was good catching up with you, man.
Yeah, we'll get your brother on, mate. You can talk about Indy 500. But I've really, really thanks, mate. Thanks for coming on. Thank you for all of our listeners as well. You know, we really appreciate it. It's been 2 months or so in the work now on this channel, and really appreciate all the support. Please go and follow all HYM on all the social media channels, all of that. Actually, some of you that watch these videos aren't actually subscribed, so make sure you go and do that,
guys. It's just a button, you know. So it's one click.
Takes 1 second,
after,
mate.
After this, I'm gonna. I'm already subscribed to your channel. So
I see that's
in on all the podcasts and on all the interviews. So
yeah,
Don't worry about that.
that's my boy there. Subscribe to our channel already. No, but thanks, mate. Make sure that everyone also goes and subscribes to Enzo on all these social media. I think it's Enzo at Enzo Fitti, I think, your Instagram.
Yeah, all of them are just at Enzo Fitti. And then we have our Twitch Fittipaldi Brothers and our YouTube Fittipaldi Brothers as well. So
sweet. But yeah, thanks guys. We'll see.
That's watching. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll see you all next time for another episode. Cheers, guys.
Perfect.